My name is David J. Harris, Jr. Join me and millions of Americans around the country as we embrace liberty and freedom. This is the David J. Harris, Jr. Show. Welcome, friends and family from around the country and literally around the world. This is another episode with your host, David J. Harris, Jr. And today I get to have a very good friend of mine on. He's become like a brother to me over these last few years as he has been in a fight to try to right the wrongs of social media and big tech. So many wrongs. They're hiding behind immunity at every turn. They're silencing us. They continue to downgrade me on Facebook. I've seen it on Instagram, Twitter. We've all seen it. They've done it. They've done it to the president of the United States. Jason Fick's case had the potential, has the potential to absolutely change everything. We've heard about repeal Section 230. Section 230 of the Communications and Decency Act is what big tech hides behind in order to give them basically carte blanche to do whatever they want to whoever they want. And I, for one, am sick and tired of it. And so is Jason in his case. And the new information, the new rendering of a decision in a different case now creates a new precedent for hopefully something to be done to change big tech's immunity carte blanche status. So with me today is my good friend, Jason Fisk. Jason, my brother, so glad to have you on with me today. How are you doing?
Doing good, Dave. How are you, bud?
I'm good. Jason Fick.
Yeah, I know. I was like, well, shows were really good, right? We were actually friends outside of the internet world, right?
I had an interview earlier with somebody named Sisk, so I think I got that little mixed up. Really, I was like, wait a minute, I said Fisk instead of Fick, so no, I apologize. Jason Fick, brother, your case, man, you've been fighting this case, you've had a case, went all the way to the Supreme Court right when Donald Trump was talking about repeal Section 230. Everybody is talking about the need to repeal or at least re-explain and give clarity to Section 230. And your case had and has everything necessary to what the Supreme Court should have looked at it. They didn't look at your case. We thought it was null and void. We thought it was like, okay, now they just got carte blanche to do whatever. But something stepped in, another case rendered a precedent, a judgment that now has given new life to your case and the potential to change the way big tech censors all of us. Let's jump into that. You've just recently filed a couple days ago a case with it's deemed it's a 60B case. Explain to us what the 60B is. And explain to us what case, this Enigma versus Malwarebytes, what decision in that case has given new life to your goal?
All right, Dave. So you have to consider the chronology of things. Everything happens in its own time. So we went to the district court, and the district court said that we were treating Facebook as a publisher when we said that their conduct, their misconduct, was economically driven. It was an anti-competitive conduct. And the court said, well,
let me pause you really quick. Just for those that haven't seen, I've had Jason on my show multiple times. For those of you that don't know, Jason had built over 24 million followers across multiple pages on Facebook. Facebook unpublished the equivalent of about 12 to 14 million of those followers. Jason was making an enormous amount of money. I mean, like basketball player, you know, good NBA ball player type of money monthly from that, from the organic traffic. He was not paying for ads on Facebook. Facebook didn't like that Jason was making money and that Facebook wasn't getting paid. So they unpublished due to content. They said it was based on content that they were taking down Jason's pages. Fast forward a little bit. They agreed that if Jason sold the pages to basically one of his competitors, that they would re-upload the pages. They re-uploaded those pages and then re-uploaded them with all the exact same content. So their whole decision on why they took Jason's pages down really didn't make any sense if it was over content, because they put it up with the same content. So that kind of summarizes overall what's in your case, but it's tortious interference, it's anti-competitive trust, it's list off some of the things that it is, and then we'll jump back into where it's at.
We sued for unfair competition, fraud, extortion, and tortious interference. Those are all subsets of an antitrust, right? It's economic warfare where Facebook made its decisions for monetary purposes. The Ninth Circuit even recognized that it was for monetary purposes. Now, nothing in Section 230 has anything to do with monetary. It had to do with protecting children from harmful content. Well, my case, as you said, isn't a content case. Content became irrelevant because they reinstated the same content. Well, they said, well, I'm treating them as a publisher. No, that's not exactly what I'm suing over. I'm not suing over the content. And I'm not suing over my conduct. I'm suing over their misconduct. It's a totally different animal. Now, the interesting part about that is that, like I said, chronology matters. We went to the district court and we said they took their actions for monetary purposes. The court said, well, you can't treat them as a publisher, and that nothing in 230C1 turns on the alleged motives for removing content. Well, first off, removing content isn't even under 230C1. The courts have that wrong too, and that's based on one word. You can't treat them as the publisher, which is the primary publisher who originally published it. They've converted that into a publisher, which is any publisher in addition to the publisher.
So let me unpack that a little bit. Let me unpack that. So at me as a content a creator, I create content and then I put that on Facebook. Facebook is the platform. And CDA, the way that they've been interpreting CDA, they've been giving basically immunity to the actions taken by the platform, saying that they're not the publisher, which or the creator of the content, which is me. What you're saying is that actually in the law itself, it doesn't say the publisher. It says they cannot be treated as a publisher.
No, am I right? It's the other way around. It's the other way around. They cannot be treated as a publisher
because it's the explain that, unpack that a little bit, clarify that for us.
If you post something, you're the publisher, right?
Okay, right.
I cannot treat a service provider as you.
Right.
Can't. Okay.
Right.
Now the thing is that if Facebook, Twitter, Google, whatever else like that, take your content and do something with it, anything with it, they become a publisher.
Because they're developing the content.
Right, because they're manipulating the content in some way. They have some investment, some action whatsoever involved, right? Well, as soon as they become a publisher, the courts believe that it means that you can't treat them as a publisher. Well, then that means anything they do is covered under C1. That conflicts with the next law that is actually a publisher function, which is to remove content. The two can't coexist because if you remove content, you're a publisher. But if you're completely immunized under the first law, what's the purpose of the second law? It's gone, right?
So let's use Donald Trump as an example.
Right.
He's putting content on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. They've canceled him on all of those platforms. Mm-hmm. He would have a lawsuit in this. He should have a lawsuit in this case, right? Based on what you're saying. They're giving them immunity to do whatever they want to his content.
Well, let's gloss over a little bit of the A publisher versus the publisher, because what happened with Enigma has basically rendered that whole idea moot. It doesn't matter anymore. And here's why. As of our Ninth Circuit filing, the Ninth Circuit found that I was treating them as a publisher, and they said, quote, now remember this quote. Nothing in 230C1 turns on the alleged motives for removing content. Okay?
Okay.
So let me be real clear what that says. Motive doesn't matter if you're a publisher. Now remember that. Okay?
Wow.
Motive doesn't matter if you're a publisher. Okay. All right. So they can do anything they want, really. I mean, if there's no – who cares about motive, you know? I mean, what if they want to discriminate against race?
Because they don't like you. They don't like your beliefs. They don't like your ideologies. They don't like – they just don't like you. Who cares?
Correct.
If that motive doesn't matter.
They can do that. Right. Right now, that's
which
the way
what they're doing right now.
Exactly. Now, this other case, now, after my Ninth Circuit court had already granted the judgment, right, and they granted the dismissal, we go into a stage called petition stage. Petition's not being heard. And it's amazing because I have arguments online and people are just so clueless. A petition is not being – A petition is essentially asking for them to listen to you. They haven't listened to you. So we never at any given point were able to use Enigma because Enigma's judgment came out after our hearings. We were not heard with that information. So it's a new precedent. Just so everybody's following, it's a matter of order. So
when was the ruling on this Enigma case?
The Enigma case finalized October 13th, 2020.
So literally just a few months before the end of the year.
Yes, but weeks before my petition to the Supreme Court. I was that far deep into this that this case happened. Now, there was no media, none. Like, I barely even saw mention of this Enigma case at Beat 230, and it was like, huh. And I'm warning everybody, and your audience will understand this. If you don't hear it in the media, it's probably because it's right. That's the thing. Yeah. So why do you think you haven't heard much about my case?
Because or the Enigma
right
case.
Since the beginning. Well, and I'm literally going to prove on your show today that Section 230 is wrong, that I've been right since day one, and the Enigma case proves it. Okay?
So just for clarity, the decision October 20, 2020 for the Enigma case actually sets new precedent that motive matters.
Yes, and let me explain why.
Which is how Big Tech's been getting away with all their decisions is they say, well, motive doesn't matter because they can't be treated as the publisher.
Correct. So let's go back to that statement.
All right.
You can't be – if you're a publisher, motive doesn't matter. That's what the Ninth Circuit Court said. They threw my case out even though I had alleged that – Facebook, and I mean, not even alleged. I mean, it was so obvious. They did it for money, right?
Yeah.
Because the content had nothing to do with it. I said that they did it for anti-competitive reasons, for money.
Right.
Motive. I mean, the Ninth Circuit even said that even though they did it for monetary purposes. Well, the Ninth Circuit even acknowledged, okay, it's for monetary purposes. Now, what did Enigma say? Enigma said the Good Samaritan provision of the Communications Decency Act does not immunize decisions to remove content that are of an antitrust animus. That's a direct quote. Now, let me boil that down. So people that don't know what the word animus means, means motivation. So if your motivation to remove content is of anti-competitive reasons, publisher no longer matters.
Wow.
You know why? Because it fails at what the court said, the most logical point to consider dismissal would be 230C, not 230C1.
Which is Good Samaritan. So the way the law is broken down, if something it flies, if it applies and it's accurate, then you go to the next lower point. So Section 230C specifically talks about being a Good Samaritan, which means they don't have a motive to take the action.
The point of Good Samaritan is you're doing it for someone else, not for your own motives. If you're doing something because you want it done, you're not a Good Samaritan, which means that now what we've said to the court essentially in our 60B is these two decisions cannot be reconciled with one another. Either being a publisher negates being motive, or does the motive negate being a publisher? The two can't, they're diametrically opposed. They're exact opposites. So realistically, what we're now asking is that at the initial threshold for Section 230 immunity, will now need to be a new question asked. You know what that question is?
Does motive matter? Were they Good Samaritan? No.
Did the service provider take any action as a Good Samaritan?
Right. Does motive
did not. We don't look at the rest of it. I don't care if you're a publisher, not a publisher. None of it. It gets thrown out because you didn't do it for the benefit of others.
So the immunity is after the Good Samaritan.
Correct. Then the question is, if they did it as a good guy.
They don't get immunity.
Right. They would have to prove that they did some of this stuff as a good guy. Now, do you think – now, the funny thing is that – and this is – my case is economic because people understand economics, right? They understand money.
Absolutely.
This was about money for me. They wanted to wipe out everybody because as we said in our lawsuit, Facebook is a direct competitor of the users. They're taking money from the guy next to me to displace me. That means they're my competitor too.
So if they're doing it, if the motive matters and it comes to money, does motive matter when it comes to politics?
Now you're catching on. Everybody,
I mean, that's why so many of us conservatives have been censored. I mean, I know Democrats have been too, but it sure looks to me like, you know, they're killing my reach. They're targeting my page. They're taking followers from me. I mean, I want them to prove that all these thousands of tens of thousands of followers that I had have all decided to unfollow my page, and the tens of thousands, even 50, 100,000 sometimes a month, new followers that I was getting, now I'm not getting them anymore. Now I'm losing people every day. So motive matters if they're doing it for any reason that's not even economic. It's just because they don't like my viewpoint.
Enigma was the first crack. We're widening it, and it will continually get wider and wider. And what will happen is that all of the underlying motives for all of these companies that are doing it for themselves, economically, ideologically, politically, whatever the reason being, if it was not intended to protect children from harmful conduct in good faith, they're in trouble.
And that's what they have to prove. They have to prove that they're limiting my reach because it was potentially harmful to children, which is the whole reason CDA 230 even exists.
Well, it's not necessarily that they will have to prove it, because I do think that there should be still a broad spectrum of what is considered to be a good Samaritan in good faith, because not everybody's going to like the decisions that they make. But when you take down content, you claim that it's objectionable or offensive or whatever you want to for the protections of 230, but then reinstate that exact same content only because somebody else pays you more. It's really hard to say that that was done as a good Samaritan. Same thing goes for some of the decisions that they're out there. Like maybe what happened to you, was it done as a good Samaritan to suppress conservative viewpoint? Or was that just because they chose not to? That initial motive decision will now be left up to the courts to make that the first decision. Threshold at the first logical point. Did they act as a good guy? And I've said that on your show. If you go back to your old shows, I maintained the same thing the whole way through. Did you act as a good guy? Well, we now have a case that makes it cut and dry. And the 60B motions are rare. I mean, they're rare to ever actually work, because effectively we lost. Right. But we lost unjustly, because now this case cuts directly against mine.
Have you ever had your day in court? Seems like you should have your day.
I haven't even had oral arguments. I haven't even been in front of a judge to say, hey, look, you're wrong. Like, this is not the way it works. And I had this argument the other day, and somebody said, so you're smarter than lawyers and judges from all of these years? Yes. Yes, well,
whether or not that you're smarter, it seems to me like they just didn't even want to hear the case.
That's just like it. If you read it logically, the law has to reconcile. It has to be what they call harmonious. It all has to work together.
Right.
If the law is conflicting with one another, there's a non-harmony. And now this is where it gets into something interesting and something that we should discuss, and something I want to propose to you and some other people from this. So the question has been asked to me, well, what happens if the court just says, we don't care? Enigma's wrong, you're right, we're right, and throws it out again.
So wait. Well, for clarity again. So the Enigma case proves basically enough precedent that your case should have been heard, yet.
No, my case should have not been like the judgment in my case should not have happened, because the first logical point would be, did they act as a good Samaritan? And legitimately, the same court said that if it is of an antitrust animus, meaning if it was an anti-competitive motivation, which was the entirety of my case, it should not get immunity.
So that's what I'm saying. The same court rendered one way in the Enigma case.
Yep.
And the opposite way in your case.
Correct.
And so that's not harmonious, is it?
Right. You can't reconcile that when they're exact opposites of one another, right? So now we're essentially saying to the court, which one's right? Because if Enigma's right, which was upheld by the Supreme Court in October, mine's wrong. Like it's unjustly wrong, meaning I should have won, plain and simple, plain as day. You can take three sentences out of all of the different, you know, granting emotions and judgments and whatever, and literally make the point, because if nothing turns on the alleged motive, but the motive matters at Good Samaritan, I died. I mean, my case should have been thrown out of dismissal at Good Samaritan. Done. So what happens if they just decide to say, okay, well, you know what? Too bad, right?
What happens?
Well, that would be unjust, wouldn't it?
It'd be very unjust. Two completely opposing decisions on the same matter.
Right. Right. Exactly. It's unjust. There's a difference between being wrong and being unjust. This is clearly unjust. It's not reconcilable without going in deeper and actually unpacking everything we said, which would ultimately end up being right, because there are things that are said all over the internet that are just flat wrong. And they tell me I'm stupid. Yeah. And it's like, no, you're just wrong. And I don't even want to explain it. But unjust is different. The question is, why was it unjust? Because let me ask you something. If I can't treat them as a publisher, and that immunizes everything, absolutely everything, racism, I mean, it could be discrimination, it could be anything, right? Wouldn't that be too broad? Isn't that really broad?
Yeah, it seems like it's very broad, way too broad.
Okay. What exactly is a publisher? What's a publisher? What's the publisher? Now, remember, I said you can't be treated as the publisher, which is the actual reading of the language of the law, which they've interpreted to be a publisher. But if being a publisher is absolutely everything they do, wouldn't that be a little vague?
Very vague. So what would you do then? What happens if you got this? They both are right.
Well, I'm setting the stage for this one. So if it's vague, and two decisions can be diametrically opposed because it is so vague, would that not be considered an arbitrary decision?
Yeah, it would be very arbitrary.
We wouldn't know where the actual pin lands on this one. It's just, hey, you know, if you're a publisher, maybe. If you're not a publisher, maybe motive. It's so vague that it calls into question something else. Now, let me ask you something. If something is unjust and I never have my day in court, what do they call that?
Well, you didn't have due process. You were denied due process.
Correct. I never got my day in court. Why did I not get my day in court? Because the law is so vague that it led to arbitrary decisions that are now proven to be conflicting. There's no way around it. They conflict.
It sounds like you need to sue the United States of America over your constitutional rights.
Do you? Basically, you let the cat out of the bag. But the fact of the matter is that if the judge doesn't vacate this, we run into a situation where it's so unjust that
that's what you have to do.
Aren't doing their job. And the reason they're not doing their job is because, as they have literally said, 230 has been interpreted broadly.
Yeah.
It's synonymous with vague. And the point of it being that vague is there's something called the void for vagueness doctrine. When a law is so vague that it leads to arbitrary prosecutions or decisions, it's too vague to be constitutional.
Wow.
So if they don't want to do this, we are preparing ourselves. And this is what I would like to invite you. And I've talked to several other big personalities, many of them. I have standing to sue because my constitutional rights under the 5th and 14th Amendment were violated. We may go under other amendments as well and other doctrines, but specifically we're going to go in under the void for vagueness doctrine. I don't see why we can't have other litigants. Why can't I be co-plaintiff?
Absolutely.
We would like you all to join, and it will be America versus the United States of America.
Yeah, we the people. We're the United States of America.
Thank you, Dave. You just said it for the first time.
I mean, it's like the Supreme Court didn't do their job. I think toward the end of last year, they continued to not even look at cases. It's like, so let me ask you this.
Job.
Is it possible for them to not look at a case when two different lower courts have completely opposite opposing rulings on the same matter?
Okay.
Wouldn't they be forced to actually look at that case?
So let me back that up a little bit, because we don't have two different circuit courts with opposing decisions. We have opposing decisions within a single court.
That's what I mean. The same court.
A single court
decisions coming from the exact same Ninth Circuit Court.
Right. They're opposing decisions within the Ninth Circuit Court. And the problem with that is the Supreme Court decided not to handle it because it's not an opposing circuit court. They do handle circuit court conflicts. So if we sue the United States, it won't be in California. It will be most likely in Washington, D.C., and we will go through district and I'm not sure what circuit that is, first or fourth or whatever circuit it is, but it's a separate circuit of the Ninth Circuit. And see, here, let me ask you, I'm going to ask you a really kind of a trick question for all of you out there listening. If we come in there and say that the law is too vague and it's leading to arbitrary decisions and therefore is unconstitutional, will they decide whether it is – do you think that they'll decide it's too vague and strike Section 230 down, meaning repeal 230? Or do you think that they will say it's not too vague and render a decision as to why it's not too vague? Which one do you think they're going to do?
Well, if it's a D.C. court, they may say it's not too vague and just try to leave it up there.
So if they say it's not too vague, they're probably going to explain why it's not too vague, right?
They'd have to explain why. But to me, if they actually looked at both cases and looked at both rulings, they'd have to say it's too vague.
That's just it. So the trick answer here is it doesn't matter. Because if they say it is too vague and they strike Section 230 and they repeal 230, which is what President Trump talked about.
Yeah.
There's no more statutes standing in the way of me getting protections, which means everybody can sue them. Or the flip side is they say, wait, it's not too vague, and they try to backpedal this thing. And then they say, well, here's why it's not too vague. And they go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and they explain what it is. And we go, oh, well, that's interesting because the Ninth Circuit doesn't seem to think that. Now we have a circuit court conflict, which needs to go to the Supreme Court. Under constitutional issues.
And then they have to look at it, right? The Supreme Court has to look at.
How are they not going to look at a constitutional challenge of a statute when it's conflicting literally everywhere and it's destroying America? Because the only way to combat everything that's going on right now is to challenge the government. And that is literally going away because the place that we challenge it is the place that we talk. Social media. They control it all. This is dangerous territory we're in.
So what we thought, and again, I remember you text me as soon as you found out that the Supreme Court basically just wasn't even going to hear your case. It was like a sock to the stomach. I felt it. I know you overly felt it. I mean, you felt it. But and I just said, we got to just, you know, pray, hope something happens. You had this idea, or your attorneys brought this idea for the 60B, which revives it with new precedent. So your case is not over and done. You are still fighting for truth and justice in social media. And to me, brother, it sounds like you got a good new direction. How long might this take before you hear back on this 60B ruling?
We're not really sure how long the 60B will come back at. If the judge is a good and honest judge, he'll see that there's a massive conflict here. And realistically, he's not making any massive changes. This is simply vacate my judgment because Enigma conflicts and Enigma proved my case to be correct. I should have beaten 12B6 dismissal. End of story. If it doesn't happen and we go to the level that we have to go after the United States for the actual law itself, I know that there are people that have come to me that, and I would say to your own audience, we are going to need financial support because this is a big one. We are taking on the job because there's no money involved in this. This is simply fixing the course of American history by fixing social media, by fixing Section 230. We need to do this first because every other case that ever comes, including the one that's out there for Twitter right now, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that everybody says, well, they're not responsible for any of the content on their site. Well, if they are, there's a difference in, I'm sure you know the word negligence, right? Negligence really comes down to whether or not you knowingly or unknowingly did something. If you knowingly are negligent, well, then you're negligent. If you unknowingly did something wrong, you're not negligent. Well, the same thing applies because, again, think about motive under Good Samaritan, right? If you're negligent, you're not being a Good Samaritan, right? So let me ask you something. If there were child pornography sitting on a table and you walked past, you looked at it and you left it there, is that negligent? Because you knowingly left it there.
Yeah,
now,
absolutely.
If you walk past the table having never seen it, are you negligent or did you just
unknowingly? No, you didn't know it was there.
Okay.
Yeah, you didn't know it was
there. So that principle in itself is where that whole case, the Twitter case comes into play is if Twitter knew that pornography is being left up and they made a decision knowingly to leave that content there, they are no longer a good Samaritan and it fails at the threshold.
Yep.
that case is going to be important. And I hope they're paying attention to what I'm saying here, because that's going to be a very important point. And Enigma brings it out, is if the site is acting as a bad guy, because they, and as I believe it was one of the cases here, it said they could actually solicit content and prioritize that content over other people, thus making them the publisher of that content. Because if you say I want A content but not B content, yes, they're not the creator of it, but they are developing A.
And I just know it's a mess.
It's a mess.
I know that there's so many cases that have tried to
dig in.
Big tech that have just been brushed off. Oh, they've got immunity. They've got carte blanche. It needs to stop. We need it to stop. It must stop. Otherwise, where will it go? They'll have there's no limits to how they will limit, minimize, or just cancel whoever they want, whenever they want, for whatever reason, whether it's good or not. And most of them are bad, or they're for their own benefit. We need this to be heard. So, Jason, I know jasonfick.com. It's F-Y-K.
Jason, I don't modify my site all that much. You can reach me through there if you need to. But honestly, because I'm on a 30-day ban from Facebook right now, as usual, for something stupid. And but I do. I have What'd started taking. I posted a screenshot of a company who was out of stock. So they weren't actually selling it. It was out of stock. Firearms and ammunition. It said that we are offering a good stimulus $1,400 package, and I screenshotted it and said that that's a stimulus package that I could get behind. Oh no! I'm selling firearms.
Community. Oh my goodness!
That's the kind of lunacy that we're dealing with. It's ridiculous. But lunacy. Meanwhile, I mean, I've reported, and I do this, and I have got so much evidence that, I mean, realistically, I know you believe in God. God help them if we get into court, because they're in trouble. I mean,
no,
I've got
no. I'm gonna be praying that He does not help them. No, you already know I'm praying for you, brother. I've been praying for you that God helps you.
It's ridiculous. The stuff that they do a lot. You know,
yeah, if they just look at the evidence that you've got and hear your case, it should be over and done with. It should be all over with. It'll be a huge, massive case. It would set precedent for then any of us content creators that have been limited, canceled, all of that, to then file our own suits. It's so necessary, brother. I'm so glad I could hear the wind back in your sails. Mm-hmm. After the Supreme Court rule just said we're not going to hear it. It was, the wind was let out of your sails, but this has added new wind to your sails. And I'm believing for you, believing in you, and hoping that that you get your day in court. You need your due process. You need your day in court, and that'll have ramifications for all of us. So where can people find you and support you?
Find me on Twitter at JasonFYK. That's my whole name, Jason Fick. I would say that is a place to reach out to me if you can help, especially with this case going forward to potentially against the country. But more specifically, I invite people. I know that reading legal documents is really tough. It's complex, right? I've just gotten good at it because I've had to. But if you read our 60B, it's cut and dry. There's no way that these judgments can conflict. And because they cannot be reconciled with one another, that calls into question everything that Justice Thomas had called into question, which was everything we called into question in the case that they just didn't address. There's conflicts within the law that have to be addressed. It doesn't work. Please read it. Please understand it. I'm not giving up.
Dave, where can you read that at? JasonFick.com, right?
Yeah, I have it pinned on my post right now. It's relevant to every single Section 230 case out there. And I would say this to anybody that is a naysayer, because I have all these people, like four followers, going, oh, you're so stupid. Section 230 has already ruled. I wouldn't be surprised if these are bots working on behalf of these big tech companies. They don't want this fixed.
We know all about the bots. Mike Lindell is always talking about those bots, man.
Right. The Enigma case couldn't have happened if we weren't correct. It did happen. It did set the precedent. And I would suggest that people start paying attention, because what we said is right. Go back through all of our documentation. We pulled it apart in every way. It's right. They just didn't do it. Now they're forced to, because you've got two conflicting decisions. And the reality is, the Section 230 is about to get fixed.
Love it. Well, we need it to, brother. We're praying for you. I'm asking all my audience to pray for Jason, pray for his legal team, and pray that justice comes in his case again, which will set the record straight for all of us. Jason, my brother, thank you so much, man, for being on the show today, praying for you, believing that God is not done with this case, that and just believing that he's in it with you. I mean, ever since the first time we talked, when I prayed, I just felt like God said, no, love him like a brother. I'm in this with him. He's in this fight with you, man. So I think we're going to see some good things come, hopefully sooner than later.
Hopefully, Dave. Hopefully.
All right, brother. I'd love to have you back on again in the future.
Thank you.
Friends, please share this podcast episode, however you're seeing it or hearing it. Get the word out there. People need to understand what's at stake, and Jason needs his day in court. How are we in the land of the free and the home of the brave if we don't, if we're not allowed our day in court? Jason's case should be open and shut. Once it's open and they look at it, he needs his day in court. So check him out on Twitter, JasonFYKFick.com is his website, or Jason Fick on Twitter, and share this with everybody you know. And friends, for my sponsor today, Find.com. Check out Find.com. You're going to want to know about this new search engine that is going to rival Google. You're going to want to know about it. We all need to be on it. Go check out Find.com. God bless you. Have a great rest of your day. We will talk to you all again next time. Bye-bye.
My name is David J. Harris, Jr. Join me and millions of Americans around the country as we embrace liberty and freedom. This is the David J. Harris, Jr. Show.